Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, this is Jake Gibb. You're in the net live.
This is Taiba Hanif Park, and you are in the net live.
Aloha, this is Mike Lambert, and you are in the net live.
Lloyd Ball, and you're on the net live.
Ryan Millar, you're in the net live.
Hey, this is Heather Bowen, and you're live in the net. Nope, that was totally wrong.
Hey, this is Karch Kira, and you're in the net live with Willie and Barney.
Morning, everybody. Good morning. Here we are, the Net Live here on the volleyballnetwork.com. I'm your intrepid host, Kevin Barnett, and I'm glad you have chosen to join us here on a Monday morning live, or perhaps you're catching us on a Thursday via our podcast free on iTunes. If you're having it on Thursday, hope you're having a good day then. Your week's been pretty good. The weekend is not far away. But welcome, everyone who's listening live here on a Monday. It is fun to be here on the volleyballnetwork.com and here at the Net Live. I'm your host, Kevin Barnett, and once again, it is a Barnett-only show. Everyone else is bailed out. The home court is left to just me. I guess I just have to sit here and spike against the wall by myself. Luckily, there is a lot to talk about in the world of volleyball. We have a lot of stuff to discuss. This past weekend, the Men's World Championships concluded. It was a long tournament. It was a good tournament. It was an interesting tournament. A lot of stuff starting to take shape for teams across the world as they head into the two-year drive. This next year will be qualification for the Olympics, and the following year will be the Olympics. So a very important transitional period for the men to find out where they're at. We'll talk about how the U.S. men did. We'll talk about some of the other teams in the world and where they stand and how that whole thing might shake out over the next couple of years. We've got some notes from USAV just about coaches and stuff. I've been talking to them a little bit about it. We also have senior setter from Stanford, Cassidy Lickman, is going to be joining us here on the program. Our first player interviews from the NCAA women's season that has gotten crazy over the last week. Lots of wild stuff going on. Number one's going down. Ex-champions having a rough time. It's really an interesting time to be a fan of NCAA volleyball. Also have some reaction from last week. We have Billy Berger on the show last week. He talked about the beach and some of the business of beach. I think that's interesting. Got a little bit of follow-up on the second annual UC Irvine International Volleyball Tournament. I think it was an excellent event down there at UC Irvine. I hope someone out there had an opportunity to attend and can give us a call and let us know how it was. Speaking of that, you need to give us a call today, 347-677-1525. And by us, I mean me. So call in. I need some help here. I need some other topics, some other questions, just stuff you're interested in. I don't even care if it's volleyball related. Just call in and talk about something, 347-677-1525. If you want to talk about the Eagles hanging on last night against the 49ers, I'm all for that. If you want to talk about motocross, everyone knows I'm down with that. If you want to somehow relate it back to volleyball, that'd be okay too. I think that would be just fine. Hey, I had a big weekend. Always like to talk about what we're doing here in the lives in between stints in the home court. It was a big week for me, lots of fun. Jack Johnson at the Hollywood Bowl on Friday night with some good friends. Took a limo up to the bowl, watched Jack Johnson, who was awesome. He's all about the music. Saw John Mayer a few weeks ago at the bowl. The music was okay. He was more about talking. That was kind of the highlight, kind of his personality. But Jack Johnson, all about the music. Great show, great fun, great friends, really a neat night out. That was followed up by Saturday morning early football game with the Eagles. Those of you who have been following us through last year and on into this year, we were struggling last year. This year has turned out to be a little bit better. Now 3-4 and on a two-game winning streak. Took down another team 18-0 Saturday morning, so that was pretty good. And then I went into World Championships mode. Did the World Championships live on Universal Sports both Saturday night and Sunday night. It was same-day coverage. For those of you that were watching the scores, it was same-day coverage in the evenings of what had gone on in Italy. But it was live to air, myself and Jim were out there doing that. Paul Sunderland was my normal partner. He was overseas. He was over at the tournament in Italy. So I had an opportunity to work with somebody new. That was a lot of fun. And we'll talk a little bit about that. We'll talk about that event and say, you know, how did this event go? Men's World Championships finished up. Brazil took the win. Cuba was second. Third place went to the Serbians. Fourth to Italy. Fifth to Russia. Notice I haven't gotten to the United States yet. The United States finished sixth, unable to defeat Russia in the battle for fifth place. They did have a good win just before facing Russia. The United States played pretty well. I forget who it was they even played now. It's been so many different matches. But they did go down to Russia pretty badly, 3-0, in that last match. And not what the United States really wanted to have to finish up the tournament. But I think if you look back on the United States men and where they're at the moment, I think that a fifth place or sixth place finish is just about right for where they are. I don't think their talent level is much higher. I know Reed is going to get upset when he hears this, if he even listens to the podcast anymore. He's not going to like me saying that they're not a top four team. Bottom line, they are not a top four team. They don't have the talent. They haven't stepped up to that level with the younger players. They've lost some of the older players. And it's just the way it is. It's just the way it is. So, unfortunately for them, I think sixth is all right. Now, if you look back at what they did 4 years ago, same event, 2006, leading on into 2008, where they eventually did pull down the gold medal, they finished 10th. So, all hope is not lost. This is not time to jump on the big red panic button. But I think it showed some deficiencies in what the United States is really capable of on the floor. I think that's the biggest deal, that there are a few problems going on with this team. I think Matt Anderson, outside hitter out of Penn State, much ballyhooed addition to the national team, I think he's behind schedule. I don't think he's developing at the rate that you'd want to see him develop. He has not got himself in the starting lineup in any sort of consistent manner. Somebody needs to work with him. I think Kevin Hansen has not really developed at a rate that you would like to see Kevin Hansen do. I mean, Kevin Hansen, good setter, came in for Loy Ball during the 2008 games, played very well when Loy needed some rest, and did a nice job in that role, but has not really stepped up his game to be the number one setter and be the starter. If Don Sujo was healthy, Don Sujo, I bet, would have started. And also Jonathan Winder. Name that we've not heard very often, Jonathan Winder, a second-year player on the national team out of Pepperdine University. Had a lot of success at Pepperdine. Tall guy, goes about 6'8". He should be a guy who is pushing that position, pushing Hansen to be better, pushing a guy like Sujo to be better when he's back. That should be happening, and Jonathan Winder just has not done it. Those who watch the coverage, it was on FromSport.com quite frequently, lost a couple of links throughout the week, and some copyright issues, but you were largely able to see it. Did have an opportunity to see Jonathan Winder play a couple of matches towards the end, and he came in, and I thought played pretty well towards the end. It was nice to see him out there. I think I want to see more of him. I want to see him develop as a player. I want him to be a real force at the setting position. So those guys are really my questions. Are you going to, as a staff, for the United States, Alan Knipe, Gary Sato, that staff, are you going to be able to develop talent? Are you going to be able to bring these guys to the level they need to be that they can participate in a top four finish at the Olympic Games in 2 years? That's what I wonder about. And we've talked a lot about Loy Ball in that setting position. Are you going to call Loy Ball? I think at this point you have to call him. I think you have to gauge his interest. And I think he needs to be in the gym halfway through next season, at the very least. I don't think he's going to be available for two whole years. I think physically it's going to be a question. So you want him to come into the gym, be in the gym, know the guys, get the guys to know him, and see if he really wants to be a part of it. But I think that's an avenue that needs to be explored, definitely needs to be explored. So I would call Loy Ball and bring him into the gym. Bright spots. Let's talk about some bright spots for the Americans before we talk about the rest of the tournament and some of the other performances out there. I think I think the play of Clay Stanley and Reed Pretty were bright spots. I think both of them played excellent volleyball. They were certainly the guys who were carrying the brunt of what was happening. I think both of them had really good performances. And Clay in particular, here's a guy who, he doesn't start on his Russian team all the time when he's overseas, but comes in and dominates in the finals every year. And he's done a similar thing on the national team. He's not always great in friendlies or in World League or at certain points of the league when it doesn't really matter. But as soon as he gets to World Championships or he gets to the Olympic Games, he's the MVP. He's an unbelievable player when the chips are down. Here's a man, he had 23 aces. He led the entire tournament in aces. He had, five more than the next closest guy. And if you look at a team like Italy, who made the Final Four, ended up finishing fourth, their two top servers combined had 9 aces. May have gotten a couple more at the end, but going into the last round, 9 aces. So give you an idea of how great that is. Clay Stanley, unbelievable from the service line, at any moment can step back and hit at 2 or 3 and score for the United States. So I think Clay Stanley, Reed Pretty, really did a nice job. I was also impressed with Sean Rooney. I think Sean Rooney stepped up and played well. And we've been waiting for that. I think Sean, he needs to pin down that spot. If Matt Anderson is going to develop, Sean Rooney needs to pin down that spot opposite Reed Pretty on the floor. And speaking of Reed Pretty, I'm hoping that we have him here on the line. Reed, are you there?
What's happening, Kevin?
Holy cow, fresh off the airplane and back into the radio show for once. Welcome back to the Net Live.
Thanks, man. It's been a long road trip.
Man, I'll bet it was. First of all, tell us how the family's doing.
The family's good. It appears that farting is funny at all ages, even for infants. And got about 10 great minutes of some of the best smiles I've seen from Caden. And it was because he was passing some gas. It was classic. Great to be home.
That never gets old, by the way. 8 and 6, it's like the funniest thing you could possibly do. Is even just make a fart sound. Doesn't have to be real. It's unbelievable. So you just rolled off the plane and rolled back to the house from the trip home?
Yeah. Kevin Hansen and I, we have a pretty fast turnaround. And as soon as it became obvious that we weren't going to be playing Sunday, we finished Saturday. We used air miles and did everything we could to get back home. And so we took off on Sunday and got home late last night. And now just back in Huntington with the family.
Okay, so I saw that Clay and Rich were at the final. So most of the rest of the team were at the final match, and you and Kevin Hansen had departed early.
Correct.
Okay. Give us your reaction. I've been pontificating a little bit on my opinions regarding the tournament, but give us your reaction to how things went overall, results, and pleased or not.
Kevin, to be honest, I was a little nervous calling in because I feel like usually I'm pretty good at being analytical and somewhat objective, but I think it's still pretty fresh, pretty disappointed. It's hard to kind of step back and kind of take a look at things the right way. And so I probably can't say too much just because, like I said, just emotionally pretty frustrated. I think that our team and our families being a part of this journey have put a lot of sacrifice into this particular tournament. And to come up short, especially in that game versus Italy, I just felt sad after that game for the reason being that in your lifetime, you don't get an opportunity to play for a world title that often. And to kind of take yourself out is, I think it's kind of a, not to be too dramatic, but a little bit of a tragedy to kind of play yourself out of that game when we had every opportunity to close that game out and probably 3 sets and be in the final four and who knows what happens from there. So I think just being on the tail end of my career, that hits a little bit harder. And, you learn not to take those things for granted. And it's frustrating. Hopefully we will be able to just take all we can from this experience and build the next two summers.
Yeah, it's an interesting point you make, the fact that this is probably your last World Championships. The next one comes around in 2014, and I wouldn't expect you to be on the indoor team at that point. Is that about right?
I've gotten away from trying to make statements like that. But, you know, towards the tail end of this tournament, in that last match, too, I fell awkwardly and got a little bit hurt. And obviously, as you know, your body is not as responsive as it used to be. So if I'm still competing...
You need a life alert break when that happens. There's a thing called life alert. You can press it. It's around your neck. And maybe
okay.
Over and pick you up.
Yeah. I wasn't wearing my power balance either, so maybe... But you know, I have no idea. Trying to get through, you know, this turnaround here to Kazan in about 7 to 10 days is going to be really fast. And obviously, the schedule is jam packed with Champions League matches and league matches and cup matches. So to look beyond 2012 is difficult. But I will say now that with the little guy here and our family kind of starting, you know, this quest of world traveling 365 of the year is becoming less appealing.
Yeah, it's tough to pack up three people instead of just two, and especially an infant with all the stuff and doctors and everything else that goes into it. It does become a much bigger issue. Having done it with both my sons, it's very, very challenging. Good question on the chat board, Brian McDermott. He wants to know kind of in the big picture, did this tournament answer more questions for you about who needs to be on the floor or what needs to be done, or are you left with answers or questions about this team?
That's a good question. That's a really good question. I know at a press conference, Alan said that he learned a lot and there was questions answered. So I think it was productive from a coaching standpoint. I think one of the things that I learned was just how valuable Ryan Millar is. And not just in terms of competing, but in terms of his leadership and practice. I think that this was the biggest block that I've been on the team where he's been absent. And that's a guy we need on the floor, not just for his – because he plays the middle position like an outside hitter. I mean, he's so creative, and I think he really kind of sets the tone for the rest of the guys.
I'm glad you mentioned Ryan Millar, because that was one of the things I had on here. I think Millar – has to commit to this team. I think he has to decide to show up after the professional season, come in the gym and train. No more back and forth. No more trips to Utah for 3 weeks, come in for a week and play. I think this is a man who needs to decide if he's on this team or not come this next season. And I wonder if there's some of that feeling from some of the players that some commitments need to be made by Millar and others as to whether you're in or you're out.
I think he has made that decision. I think it was just really unfortunate when he came in to this training block. The second day he was here, he blew out his ankle, and it was the worst ankle sprain I've ever seen. And obviously, playing for as long as I have, I've seen a lot of ankle sprains. I know that was really tough, but he's addressed the team, and I think that he is committed for the long term, and we need that. And you know, his in and out, my in-and-out kind of nature and some of the other guys on the team have really been a tough struggle here for the last two seasons. And so, you know, the general feel on the team is, hey, you know, come May 2011, we're in this. We're in this to see what we can do. And there is no more summers off, et cetera. So, you know, hopefully everyone will be on board.
Talking about May 2011 and 2 years out from the Olympic Games and the broadcast, we spent a lot of time talking about this is a transitional time. This is the last time in a big tournament that you'll really see young players getting a long leash and getting an opportunity to develop on the floor as this transitions from being a training and development time the 2 years after the Olympics on into a ramp up and qualify and play well in the Olympics time. Talk about that process for you as you embark upon that for what will now be with the third time.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things. It's always there's always that tension. My dad said it well last night as we were talking about it, is that you want to be able to give guys experience, yet you know, you don't want to sacrifice what you're trying to do now, trying to get guys experience, you know. So there's always this fine line as a coach, I think you need to you know, just kind of balance. And, you know, I think one of the hardest things to do is to determine if a guy's ready or not. And I think that we have tremendous talent on our squad, but I don't know that I would call it depth. Depth means you can sub out any number of players with the same result. And so, you know, we definitely have a lot of guys. I think, in fact, there was so much competition in between spots that it took, I don't know, almost the majority of our training block to decide which 14 we're going to be taken. And I think whenever you're doing that, that can almost have a somewhat of a reverse effect when you want to be focusing on team dynamics, but you don't know who the team is yet. And so I think you're right. I think starting 2011, it's going to be kind of time to zone in on that core group and try to get some continuity going there.
There's a lot of controversy in this tournament about teams dumping matches in order to manipulate the next round. You had a situation where Russia threw a match to Spain and Brazil threw a match to Bulgaria to mitigate the possibility of Brazil, Russia, and Cuba all ending up in the same pool fighting for one spot in the Final Four. What were your opinions on what was going on there, and what was the general feel on the ground about the manipulation?
It kind of turned the tournament into somewhat of a circus. There wasn't that special feeling about this tournament like there has been in years past. It kind of just seemed manipulated, and even in our match against Italy, I mean, the reffing, I don't know if you saw some of those calls. I mean, certainly, you know, the takeaways from that match are all the things that we as a team could have done differently. But at the same time, you know, when refs are making crazy calls at you know, crunch times of the matches, it doesn't help. And, you know, I really thought, I said on the radio last week, I really thought Czech was going to upset Brazil. And had they not set their opposite in the previous two rounds, you know, 500 balls,
yeah.
I think they would have done it. And that would have just been so interesting to see. You know, an upset there, because Czech really loses in this. They had such a great start to the tournament and were really the best playing team as a unit. They just didn't have the lungs or the capacity to play that good over time. So, you know, a long way to say this tournament just kind of got a little bit, I think we all got cheated in a sense, you know, like it just didn't have that special feel.
It was definitely set up for Italy to do well. They wanted Italy to make the final, and Italy ended up playing teams like Iran and still going five with Iran. You guys went five with Cameroon. There were some interesting matchups throughout the entire tournament, and I don't fault any of the teams for throwing matches, for manipulating that lineup, because you don't want to face Russia and Cuba for an opportunity to play in the final. You'd much rather face Czech and Germany when you're trying to go to the final. I think it's unfortunate that that's the way it went, but I'm not sure exactly how you fix that.
Yeah. I saw a press release where they were, you know, the FIVB was acknowledging the shortcomings of this particular format, and they were going to investigate further of how to make it better. But I don't have an answer for that either.
Yeah.
Of how
yeah.
you make it better.
Hey, another good question coming off the chat board. How far of everyone else do you think Brazil is at this point, or are they not? Are they vulnerable, in your opinion?
No, they're definitely not far above. They have that aura about them because of what they've done in years past, but I was very – I was not as impressed. I mean, in 2004, Brazil was hands down head and shoulders above the rest of the field. At this point, they just have the most continuity. You know, they have really good block and defense system that's been in place now for over a decade. But their sight out is erratic, and their setting position is erratic. And so, you know, it really helps that they have such depth at the outside hitter position, and now that they have a true opposite, I think that all helps. But I would definitely not say that they're head and shoulders above the rest of the field.
Yeah, they don't appear to have the same system that they used to. They just don't have the all-around talent. I think their setting is a question. You mentioned that. And I think Bisotto, their opposite, you just mentioned him. He's the biggest deal, the biggest development for that team. The fact that they have a true big-time opposite, a large guy who's going to be a big blocker out there. Because I think Brazil, one of the chinks in their armor before was you could attack their left side. You could attack on your left side, their right side, because they had not they had a smallish setter, and they did not have a big opposite. They had a couple of smaller opposites. But now with Vissoto out there, that position has definitely been strengthened. But I do feel like Brazil is definitely vulnerable. They're not head and shoulders above everyone else. I think there's a couple of teams in there who could easily defeat Brazil. I think number one is Russia. I think Russia's just had a horrible tournament. They need to find a way to stay motivated. I want you to talk about Cuba a little bit because Cuba's in the zone. They finished second. Kind of a wild ride for them, an emotional, physical, young team. Their captain is 23 years old, for crying out loud. Their best player is 17 years old. And they're really a team on the rise. They're in your zone. And assuming neither one of you qualify next year at World Cup, if that were to happen, neither of you finish in the top three, you have to face one another for the right to go to the Olympics. Is there any chatter on your team about Cuba?
Obviously, the radar is up on Cuba. Hopefully, we're both qualified and by the World Cup. But there's no doubt that they're a physical team. The advantage that they have to every other national team right now is that they're together 12 months out of the year.
Yeah.
And they seem my call before the tournament started was, you know, what's the over-under on players leaving this trip and defecting? Because
right.
all of the previous generations all ended up in Italy, and they're all driving sick cars with fat contracts and you know, flying their families out to Italy to live. So I thought it was a guarantee that their team would disband, but for some reason, not a single guy defected, and they just seemed to have a real good thing going. And in that, I was watching just the beginning of that fifth set against Serbia, and Leon gets set an incredibly fast go to the pin, and he was already standing there. And he just jumped up and absolutely delivered cross court. There's nobody else in the world that's making that hit.
Yeah, you're talking about Wilfredo Leon, number one outside hitter, the 17-year-old phenom for Cuba, who's leading their team offensively.
Yeah, you know, I really think that the stability of their team comes from their middle blocker, Simon. You know, he's been around the block. And the scary part for the U.S. team is that Cuba now is consistently at top. It's not just a one-tournament breakout. I mean, they're getting comfortable now playing in big matches and being right in the mix at the end of tournaments. And that's scary. You know, that's not something you want to face. And that kind of experience, you can't buy. You can't make up in some practice gym. You only do it by being there. And they're starting to be there, tournament in and tournament out.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with them because of the issues of their age. And as you mentioned, defection, they lost almost their entire team in 2003 or 2002 to Italy. Most of them went over there, and you're right, they're driving fat cars, and they've got big contracts, and it's an issue that Cuba has to cope with because Wilfredo Leon, if he was in the open market, would be commanding probably $400,000 a year somewhere, or at least $200,000 a year somewhere, and instead he's still stuck in Cuba training with that team full-time. Be interesting to see what happens with that. They're coming off of a fourth-place finish in World League and now a second-place finish in World Championship, so that's important. Reed, give us what's next for you. You said you're headed off to Russia. You're going to join your team and Loy Ball this year. You're going to play back with him, so we'll definitely have the inside info as to whether Loy Ball's coming back or not.
Yeah, we've got a nice-looking team. Loy's already out there, and they've already started playing some preliminary cup matches, and the word from him is that our practices are competitive, really competitive, and that's the first time I've heard anybody describe a European pro team practice as competitive.
Nice.
But, yeah, we got Tatukin and Mikhailov on the opposite, and got a good group of guys, so hopefully we'll gel together and do some special things.
Well, I saw some interesting pictures of Loy there on Facebook with a gladiator photo shoot. Can't wait to see you that one, Reed.
Yeah, I don't know. Hopefully I avoided all such photo shoots.
Oh, no way, man. You want to be a part of that. I would think you would right into that one. That would be awesome. All right. Well, Reed, thanks very much for joining us. Continue on with the program here. You can go and enjoy some more farting with the sun.
Good stuff. All right. We'll talk to you guys later.
All right, Reed Pretty. Thanks a lot, man.
Bye.
You know, now that Reed's heading back to Russia, hopefully he will be back a part of this show on a more regular basis. That's my expectation, is that he's going to be here week in, week out, because it is a good time. 10 a.m. Monday morning here is late night there, so we'll be catching him late night, checking in here with us on the Net Live. Hey, it's been a good start. We're going to talk to Cassidy Lickman coming up here shortly. We're going to be right back here on the Net Live. Get in the chat board. It's rocking. Lots of people in there. Good info from BJ Evans, some other people. Lots of good questions, good stuff. The Net Live here on thevolleyballnetwork.com. Be back in a minute. Parents, do you know about the USYVL, the United States Youth Volleyball League? Having taught over 100,000 kids ages 7 to 15 the sport of volleyball, the league's proven techniques, super fun approach, and self-esteem lifting methods are unmatched. Truly, volleyball starts here. For more information about the league and programs in your area, visit usyvl.org. That's usyvl.org.
Hey, Reed.
Yeah, Dan.
Hey, if I wanted to call in and talk to you guys, what would I have to do?
Well, first you'd have to have something meaningful to say.
I can do that.
And then you want to probably scale that down to about 20 seconds.
Done.
And then you want to pick up the phone and dial 347-677-1525.
So I can call 347-677-1525 and say, Reed Pretty, you're my favorite volleyball player ever.
Now, Dan, when you say that, are you making fun of me? Or, is the joke on me? I don't get it.
Get off the bench. Sub yourself in. Pick up the phone and call.
The Net Live will not be held responsible for opinions and ideas expressed by others.
Welcome back. The Net Live on thevolleyballnetwork.com. Thanks for being here. It's another Monday morning here in October, a beautiful morning here in Southern California. No rain this week. Hey, we've had a good show so far. Reed Pretty checked in to talk about the Men's World Championships, which just concluded, the men finishing sixth. He is off to his professional season here shortly and will be a staple back on the program. Still have stuff to come. Comments from last week about Billy Berger talking about the business of beach volleyball, some of the things that are going on with Corona Wide Open. Got some reaction to that. Had some good chatter on the Facebook page this past week about that. If you're not a fan on Facebook, please become one. We do have some questions up there during the week, some lively discussions going on all about the sport of volleyball, lots of different things to talk about, comment on. There are some funny things that people put up there and really good reactions. So check out Facebook, The Net Live, and you can email us anytime here at thenetlive@gmail.com, thenetlive, one word, @gmail.com. Hey, we want your calls during the show here, 347-677-1525. I want to know, we talked about the national team. I want to know, here's the question of the day. Who would be the best addition to the Men's World Championships team? Or who would be the difference maker going into next year, 2011? Who do you want to see on that squad that you think is going to make a difference and why? So after we're done with Cassidy Lickman, give us a call, 347-677-1525, and tell us who it is. So let me bring in our first guest for today. She's an outside hitter and setter for Stanford Cardinal, number one ranked team in the nation. She was an incredible high school athlete and has built herself into a great college player. Cassidy Lickman, welcome to the Net Live.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. Let's tell us a little bit about this week. We got to start with UCLA. UCLA beating you guys 3-2 in a knockdown dragout match for your very first loss. What happened?
UCLA put a great match. They were really great on defense, especially by libero, Lainey Guerra, and we hit a few too many balls towards her. I mean, I think we relied a little bit too much on Alex Kleinman to bail us out. She played a great match, but we need to get more of our offense going, and at the end of the day, they just made the right plays at crucial times.
You say too much, Alex. Where's the rest of that offense going to come from? You've been a part of that offense for a while this year. You've been one of the better hitters. Where's the offense have to go if it doesn't go to Alex all the time?
Well, what we're dealing with right now is that we're having to run a 5-1 with me setting because of some injury problems. So we're getting Steph Brown going on the slide a lot more so she can be our true M1. And then our freshmen are starting to step up a little bit more. So we have Carly Lopat and Rachel Williams. And they're learning a lot of things from matches like this. So really better down the road. And Haley Spellman's had a couple breakout weekends on the right side for us. And so she's going to be a good offensive weapon in the upcoming weeks.
Is this a good check for you guys to lose a match 3-2 to a UCLA team? Were your expectations perhaps rising too high within your own team?
Yeah, I mean, I think we tried to stay pretty grounded and understand that we play in the Pac-10 and it's going to be a battle every weekend. But I think we're going to try and take this as a learning moment, take steps forward instead of back. And in this next week, now we know that we're obviously beatable. And so we're just going to have to work harder to get where we want to be.
Yeah, despite the loss, you guys have been very good this season. This is a group that lost in the third round of the tournament last year to Michigan. What do you think makes this year's group better?
I think our younger players have had a year to be in the gym with our coaches and learn our systems better and just improve in general. And I think one of the biggest things is that Alex, Gabby, and I are seniors now, and we haven't won a national championship, and that's just pretty much all we want. And we're really focused on it, and I think the whole team's on the same page and just going for that goal and trying to take it one day, one match at a time. So we have a great team chemistry, and everyone's going for the right reasons.
You know, as I look down through your experience as a player, in 07 you were a defensive player and a hitter, occasional sub. In 08 you were a setter with a little bit of hitting. 09 you were setting and hitting with efficiency. I just wonder, why haven't you played middle blocker?
Well, the first 2 years we had Feluca, so there wasn't the need for that. And I'm one of our smaller hitters, so I think that also contributes. I also think I would be a terrible middle. But I told John that I needed to play middle one game this year just to make it all around.
Yeah, for sure. You need that on your stats. You need to say, yes, I played every single position on the floor. That would be an achievement. 6'1", you're not really that small, but I guess in the middle when you compare to like 6'5", then you are fairly small.
Yeah. When our front line is 6'5", 6'5", 6'6", it's pretty small.
Well, now you spent some time in the gym with the United States team, and in 07, you played with the FIVB Under 20 Junior World Championship team in Thailand. Have you been back with Team USA, or is that an aspiration of yours to rejoin the national team?
When I'm finished, I'd love to join the national team. I don't know what's going to happen after this year. I don't know if I'm going to play after this year, but I think that would be awesome to go and play for the U.S.
Do you want to continue your career professionally, even if you're not on the national team?
Yeah, I'm planning on going overseas and playing when I'm done here.
How much touch have you had with the opportunity to play overseas? We talk a lot about the lack of experience for American players and the lack of knowledge of the overseas system. Who have you talked to, or who has been in your ear about the opportunities that are available to you worldwide?
I'm lucky to have a lot of older teammates have graduated and gone on and been really successful. I mean, Fluka and Cynthia are on the national team right now, and Fluka's going overseas this year, and Cynthia's already been. And so, those are some people I can talk to. And I'm sure when I'm done, our coaches will be willing to help me out. So, I know there's people I can go to talk about that.
All right, we've talked about the volleyball. Tell us a little bit about something outside of volleyball. What about you as a person? What's your perfect day look like, or hobbies that you enjoy?
A perfect day. Getting to sleep in would be awesome. most of the time, I feel like I end up just wasting 3 days our team really likes frozen yogurt, I can tell you, like a lot. So we usually end up going there and just sitting around and wasting time for a couple hours. Our team also just likes food in general. So we're either going to be found at Whole Foods or any Froyo location.
Okay, so pretty much you're sleeping until 11, you're getting up going to Whole Foods and then hanging out for 2 hours and then going back for more frozen yogurt. That's the entire day?
I mean, probably. As long as I don't have to read anything or do schoolwork or any physical activity because body's shot, then we're good.
You're listening to the Net Live here on thevolleyballnetwork.com. We're talking to Outwell, former hitter, but now mostly sitting, Cassidy Lickman. And Cassidy, you know, you talk about this not wanting to do any schoolwork. I've heard a lot of interesting things over the years about Stanford as a school. It's a little bit of a quirky place. I meet a lot of strange people from there. How has it been for you as a school experience?
It's been awesome. I mean, you're right. Everyone here is just really weird. But most people are weird in really cool ways. So, I mean, you could be in class with, like, someone who's invented a cure for some disease, or, like, one time I ran into the Rubik's Cube champion of the world, and that's kind of cool, just, like, have your next-door neighbor, have done something really awesome that's completely different from anything that I've done. So, people are crazy, but they're also pretty cool.
Okay, so it's an appreciation of weird excellence. So they may be really strange that they like something, but they're the best at whatever that thing happens to be.
Exactly.
Okay, I think that's a good thing for young people to learn. That's something you need to appreciate someone else's expertise, even if they're not into what you're into. Tell us a little bit about your aspirations outside of volleyball. We know you want to play overseas. You know you've had a good college career, but what interests you outside of volleyball or as an eventuality?
Well, when I'm done playing, I think I want to go into maybe like foreign policy, or I'm really interested in like nuclear issues and trying not to blow up the world. So I think I want to go into something like that after I'm done playing.
Not wanting to blow up the world. I think that sounds like a pretty decent idea. We can all get behind that for sure.
Yeah.
Well, Cassidy Lickman is a setter and a terrific player in the NCAA season. Her number one ranked Stanford Cardinal is coming off a tough loss against UCLA, but looking forward to more as they head towards the NCAA tournament. Cassidy, thank you so much for joining us. We wish you the best of luck for the rest of the season.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right. Cassidy Lickman, ladies and gentlemen. That's good. I like hearing from some of those young players, and glad to hear that she has some touch with the international game. I like to hear that because I think that's a big issue for a lot of college players. And Cassidy's fortunate she has teammates like, she mentioned, Cynthia Barboza, who's on the national team, or Feluca Akinrodowo, who's currently a star on the national team. Talking about those players, that she has touch with those athletes from friendship and from previous teams, that she can learn about the overseas and things that are out there. But I think even for many, many athletes in the women's game today, there are so many opportunities out there to go and play professionally that I think a lot of them just don't know about and don't say, hey, I want to spend 1 or 2 years after I'm done with college going and playing overseas and enjoying volleyball for a couple more seasons before I move on to life afterwards. So good stuff there, Cassidy Lickman. Get out there and check out Stanford. We're going to have more later today. It's going to be Dave Reed and then Holly McPeak coming in for our AVCA College Volleyball Weekly. We've got all the news from the past week, not only Stanford losing 3-2 to Cal, but a lot of other, or pardon me, 3-2 to UCLA, but we've got a lot of other interesting things happening with the NCAA volleyball season. There was a question earlier on the chat board when we were talking to Reed about major tournaments and things coming up for the men as we talk about that shift from a training environment the first 2 years to a ramp up to the Olympics in the last two. What you have is this next season is the first opportunity to qualify for the Olympic Games. The equivalent event to World Championships, the just concluded World Championships, is World Cup. Next year, late in the year, September, October, November, that is going to happen. Usually it's in Japan. I haven't seen where it's at. Maybe BJ Evans on the chat board already has the information on that. But that's going to happen next year, and that will be the first opportunity for the United States and any other team to qualify for the Olympic Games. The Olympic Games has 12 teams. Three of those teams will qualify out of the World Cup event. If you finish top three next year, you are in the Olympic Games. So this year it would have been Brazil, Cuba, and Serbia who would have qualified. So that's three teams. Then you have the host. That's four. Then there are five zones around the world. NorSECA, North Central and Caribbean, is the United States zone. And that's why we talked about Cuba, because Cuba is also in that zone, and typically the team challenging the United States for that spot. It includes Canada, who's been very mediocre for a number of years, Mexico, who's improved, but then went 5 with the United States, but there's no reason to fear them, I don't believe. And a variety of other Caribbean teams, none of whom have really made any waves. But that's the group that would then qualify in that tournament. So there'll be 5 of those tournaments, 5 zones across the world, that will then, the winner of that tournament, and it'll occur usually in January of the Olympic year. So that would be January of 2012. That'll be 5 teams. So now you're up to 9. And then you're going to have tournaments from all across the world. You're going to have 3 tournaments. And if you win that tournament, if you win one of those tournaments, you're only allowed to play in one, you would then qualify for the Olympics. There's the dates. World Cup is in Japan next year, November 20th through December 4th, 2011. Thank you, BJ Evans. So that'll be the first event. So that then you have 3 tournaments that you have to win. So if you fail to win that tournament in January, if you're stuck in NorSECA, say it's the United States and Cuba, if the United States happens to lose to Cuba, the United States then would have to be seeded into one of those 3 tournaments and have to win the tournament. And it's incredibly challenging to win one of those tournaments because it is teams from all over the world. The European zone is incredibly strong, usually the strongest zone in the world, and they always have teams that don't qualify for the Olympics that legitimately could have medaled. There's always a Holland or a Germany or a Poland or a Bulgaria or Italy. I mean, there's so many good teams over there in that European zone, including Russia. They're all fighting for that spot, and many of those teams will end up in those 3 tournaments trying to qualify just before the Olympics. Those 3 tournaments generally occur 2 to 3 months before the Olympic Games starts. So it's important for the United States to qualify in World Cup. So that's what the men and women have coming up. They have World Cup next year, but that'll be preceded by the same scenario of World League for the men and Grand Prix for the women. They'll both play in those tournaments, hopefully some friendly somewhere, and then they will end up into the World Cup, and then if they don't win in the World Cup, they'll have a NorSECA event, a zonal event. If they don't win that, then they'll have to go to a tournament the following season before the Olympics, the year of the Olympics. So hopefully both teams pick it up and they qualify at World Cup. Of course, the women coming off a win in the Grand Prix, great event for them. They'll be heading into World Championships. World Championships are going to be in Japan for the women, so they will be starting that shortly here. I think it's October 24th, I think, was the date I saw there up on the chat board. They're coming up, and unfortunately, there won't be any coverage of that on Universal Sports. We tried to get it, but it is not happening, so hopefully that will happen. It's October 29th through November 14th of this year for the Women's World Championships coming up, and great expectations, I think, for the women's side. I'm expecting them to do very well. I want to switch gears and talk a little bit about last week. And I want you to call in 347-677-1525 if you have an opinion about the beach. We talked to Billy Berger last week. Billy Berger is the president of Brand X Marketing. He works with Corona. He's responsible for bringing together the advertisers, the support network for the Corona Wide Open Tour, which Karch Karai is involved with. And he talked about the business of volleyball. And one of the things that he talked about was, he mentioned volleyball is an action sport, and I really still have to disagree with this. I don't think volleyball is an action sport. I think it may fit with the kind of chill attitude of the beach, but I don't think the sport itself is going to fit up there with skateboarding and motocross. And everyone knows I watch a lot of motocross. I'm into that world, and I just don't see how volleyball fits into that. They have to find their own way. And one of the other things Billy did when he talked to us is he told us some stories about how great volleyball was. And I think it's unfortunate that it was, how great volleyball was. I want to hear a story that's not 20 years old. He talked about 1984. Well, so what? So what? 1984, let's see, 26 years ago, if I'm doing my math right? 26 years ago. I really don't care what happened 26 years ago. I don't care who was on the cover back then. I don't care how those guys were going to make money for everyone else. It just doesn't matter to me. And he talked about the great match between Hav and Dodd and Steffes and Karai. Hey, dude, Billy, I'm sure it was great. It was 20 years ago, and it doesn't touch a double backflip by Travis Pastrana today. And nobody cares. Nobody in the general public cares about Karch, about Dodd, about Steffes, about Stoklos. Nobody cares about these people unless it's in the context of current stars. I've talked about this before in kind of my griping about our sport being stuck on the old stars. The only reason those names are relevant is in context with today's stars. I'm tired of hearing about Karch. No more Karch. And I'm serious about that. And we had Karch in here. It was a little controversy about 9-10 months ago. I had Karch in here because there were a couple of mistakes on our side, and it was misinterpreted. I love Karch. He's the GOAT. He's the greatest of all time in our sport. He's doing things for the beach side of the sport. He's coaching the women's national team. He's doing some great stuff. But he should not be the main attraction. And I should not hear his name. When I talk about the business of volleyball, I don't want to hear Karch's name, except for the fact that he runs that tour. I want to hear about the stars. I want to hear about Dalhauser, Rogers, May, Trainer, Stanley, Pretty. Get on to the women's national team. You want to hear about all the stars there when you talk about Logan Tom, Stacey Sakura. I want to hear about names from today. Do not come at me with names from 20 years ago, people who are 45 years old and haven't touched a volleyball in 10 years. All right, no more of that. No more of that. Let's talk about today. And I think that it's a really critical moment for the beach. They could absolutely go away right now because I don't think they move product. I don't think they have a tour. And if you can't move product, you're not going to get a tour. And so I want to know from you, if you're going to talk about the beach, is it realistic to expect that volleyball can recapture the cool of the 1980s, that bygone era that Billy's talking about? Can that come back? Who could bring that back? What is needed to bring that back? And I've got another comment for you on just the tours in general. There's been a lot of talk between the players about playing or not playing for a certain amount of money, playing or not playing in the Corona Wide Open because the purse isn't big enough. And one of the things the beach players are going to have to do is they're going to have to readjust their expectations. They expect that they show up at a tournament and it's going to be $150,000 in prize money or $100,000 in prize money in total for the tournament, whatever that number used to be with the AVP. They have to change that expectation. That number is not realistic. You know why? Because the AVP was losing money every week, every year for the last 5 years. So any money that they were putting out there for prize money, that was at a deficit. So now if the Corona Wide Open can do it, and the prize money is going to be a total purse of $5,000 or $10,000 or $15,000 or $20,000, if they can do it and make money, great. That's the market value. And you as a beach player have to come and play for that value. Demanding and expecting that you're going to hold out for a $100,000 purse is not going to happen right now. It's not going to happen for the sport. And I'm not happy about it. I'm not happy about it at all. I wasn't happy when indoor got devalued for 10 years. And players were playing for $30,000 or $40,000, and that same player today is making $150,000. That's great now. Back then, I wasn't happy about it either. And I'm not happy about it now for the beach, but it's a simple reality that that's the case. Your sport's not worth what you think it is or what you have been told over the last 5 years that it is. If you play on the FIVB, that's a completely different situation. The FIVB is financially healthy, tons of money in the bank. They pay $30,000 for the winners of the FIVB tournaments, but that can't support as many people. There's only going to be a few who can play on that. So I think the players need to readjust their thought process and decide what they're going to do. And the unfortunate reality of that is going to be you're going to lose an entire generation of beach players. Unless someone is able to step up and be a big supporter and bring the dollars back and make it a profession for these people, you're going to see an entire generation of beach players disappear. Because you're going to have everyone fall off who's in the middle, who's in the early 20s, and could climb to the level of Sean Scott, John Hyden, Rosenthal, Gibb, who could climb to that level. They're going to decide they have to do something else. So you're going to lose them. You're going to lose the pipeline of talent. The top guys, Rosenthal, Gibb, and Phil Todd, they're still going to go and play AVP or FIVB. They're still going to go overseas. They're still going to have a living. They're still going to have stuff to do. Carrie, when she comes back, can play FIVB, can go to the Olympics, has that option. But I don't think other people have that option. And I think it's detrimental to the sport. So somebody needs to step up. The players need to commit to play for less money. And they're going to have to try and build this thing together again. I don't know what the answer is on how to build it. But it certainly doesn't include talking about the cover of a magazine in 1984, 26 years ago. It involves talking about today and making it happen today. And I think Billy Berger's a part of making that happen today. I think he's a big part of making that happen today. So don't misinterpret what I'm saying. Billy Berger's not a bad guy. Matter of fact, Billy Berger's a guy who's doing stuff right because he's bringing money into this sport. But there aren't enough people bringing money into this sport. That's the big issue. So I'll get off the soapbox, at least for the moment, and let you know that the ESPN The Magazine has Kim Glass in the body issue, which just came out. So she's in there. A little bit of high publicity for volleyball. talking about getting the word out. Kim Glass, formerly of the national team, had some injury issues this year. It's kept her off the court, but she is in the body issue of ESPN The Mag, which I think is a pretty, pretty big deal. I'm going to go to commercial. I'm tired of yelling at you. It's just me today. I could yell at you some more, but I'm not. I'm not going to. I'm just going to chill out. This is Kevin Barnett. This is The Net Live, and it's thevolleyballnetwork.com. I appreciate you being here. I appreciate you calling in. If you would, 347-677-1525. Talk to you in a minute.
Hey, the gym? Well, we do too. CrossFit South Bay is an elite strength and conditioning facility with a no-gimmick approach to fitness. The CrossFit program will have you running, jumping, lifting, climbing, and moving in dynamic and powerful ways. There are no machines, ellipticals, TVs, or mirrors. We train everyone from professional and collegiate athletes to soccer moms and retired teachers. With an average class size of 10, you get personal coaching and training. We sweat together, get fit together, and have a darn good time doing it. From beginners to weekend warriors to professional athletes, CrossFit South Bay is for anyone wanting to be in the best shape of their life. Visit us online at www.crossfitsouthbay.com and mention The Net Live for your 15% discount on any of our membership packages.
All right, welcome back to The Net Live here on thevolleyballnetwork.com. Thanks for tuning in. It's been a good show so far. I'm your host, Kevin Barnett. Had an opportunity to talk to Reed Pretty, called in right after he arrived here in the United States from Men's World Championships. We talked to Cassidy Lickman, a setter and hitter from the number one ranked Stanford Cardinal, coming off a tough weekend, but still powering through. I think they're still the number one team. We'll have to see when the ABCA poll comes out later today. Talked a little bit about the beach and stuff that's happened over the last couple of weeks here on the show. Go back and check it out on iTunes. You search The Net Live in iTunes. You can listen to the show for free at your will, anytime you want, via your iWhatever. You can check us out. So search The Net Live or search The Volleyball Network inside of iTunes and get your subscription there. Also, get out on Facebook, friend us on Facebook, and you can keep up on us all week and what's happening with the men's national team, NCAA, and just opinions in general in volleyball. Hey, one of the big events we talked about last week was the second annual UC Irvine International Volleyball Tournament. This brought together the men from UCI who are in their preseason mode, getting ready for the fall season that will begin in January. And they were bringing in four club teams, one from Brazil, one from Korea, one from China, and one from Argentina to play against. And I think, actually, I think they played four matches each, so five-team tournament. And UC Irvine did manage to take a win this year. They went 0-4 last year, but they did manage to take a win this year. They beat the Chinese team, so they went 1-3, which was a big deal for them. And Brazil took it down. The Brazilian team took down the win. So big weekend for Brazil. Not only did they win world championships, but they also win the UCI International Volleyball Tournament. Not sure if that was the same news back there in Brazil, but a good win for a club team anyway. Evan Paddock from the national team opposite, who has been on the national team for the last couple of seasons, was in action with his Korean Air Jumbos and made the all-tournament team. So kind of a neat wraparound there, an opportunity for fans to see one of the players from the United States national team play for their professional team. Not always an easy opportunity to find. And thinking about this tournament, I wish that this had existed when I was a player. I would love to have been a part of a tournament like this. It would have been really, really cool to have the opportunity to play against international talent and get that touch with club teams and what's out there. I think this creates not only opportunities for UCI players to learn about the professional season and the professional league teams, but also for these professional teams to see some of the talent that's there in the NCAA, to get familiar with these players, to start seeing game films and start thinking about who do they want to have. I think it's one of the big reasons Sean Rooney signed a good contract in Korea was that he had played in World University Games over in Korea 2 years before he signed that contract. And that was a big deal for him to get that international exposure. And not everyone can make a World University Games team or make an international team or make an under 14 or an under 21 team and have that exposure that Sean happened to get. So this cross-pollination between professional teams and our NCAA, which is effectively our only professional league, our developmental league, I think is important for both sides, for our players to learn and for the professional clubs to see that there is some really great talent out here. And I'd love to see people on the women's side of the ball get this done. I want to see this happen more often. I want club teams coming here all the time to play against our teams. I think it's a great, great opportunity for everyone involved. Hey, 347-677-1525, call in here. Tell me anything about anything, anything we talked about today, anything you want us to talk about in the future, any of that good stuff. I see Jay Hosick out there. He's out there on the chat board. I did put it out there for Jay to come in and be a guest host today, but instead he just figured he'd be on the chat board. Maybe he can't make too much noise there in his office. Kind of disappointing he's not even calling in now. It's not like the volleyball offices are heavily patrolled by everyone. My goodness. What else are we going to talk about? Here's a call. I know what we're going to talk about. We're going to go to the College Volleyball Weekly. This is going to be what we're going to do. And I had a little treat for everybody. Everyone getting sick of the music. Here's a little something new. The Net Live, in association with the American Volleyball Coaches Association, is proud to present each week the College Volleyball Weekly, a weekly wrap-up of what has happened around the NCAA world of volleyball. And in light of this past week, I think playing the UCLA marching band Sons of Westwood is apt. Go for the big finish. There we go. That's it. So welcome to the AVC College of Volleyball Weekly. Dave Reed, are you there?
Oh, how are we doing, Kevin?
I am good. I am good. Thanks for being here. Dave Reed of ESPN.com, calling us from Colorado Springs, correct?
That is correct. Thanks for having me back.
My former hometown. My former hometown of Colorado Springs.
You know, we miss having the national teams here.
I'll bet you do, but we don't miss the altitude. I'll tell you that. National teams do not miss hitting a ball and having it go 60 feet instead of 42. So,
just a minor drawback to practicing here.
Yeah, yeah. I thought that was really unfortunate. And that whole idea of you, the altitude benefits you, I really never got that one. It really never happened for me. I still, whenever I went upstairs, was winded around there. I don't know why that was.
Yeah, you know what? If you're a cross-country runner, I think there's a benefit to it. But for a sport like volleyball, I think especially when you make the change and go down to a lower altitude, it really does affect, you know, the way you perform.
Yeah, I think you go to the lower altitude, the ball behaves differently, and you definitely feel like you're breathing soup, which I was never too happy about. Well, David,
yeah.
Big week for the Big Ten and the Big 12. Penn State, they lose twice. Is it over? Are they done?
You know what? Right now it's looking pretty tough. There's something missing right now with Penn State, and it might be just the chemistry on the team. They definitely are looking for someone else to help Deja McClendon on the outside. You know, I don't know right now if Darcy Dorton is going to come back this year. Seems to be a well-guarded secret. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that might be the thing that really helps them out the most, but we'll have to wait and see because nobody's saying anything.
Well, I'll tell you what, they lost to Purdue 3-2, and they lost to Indiana 3-1. So neither of those teams are ranked, according to the information I have here. And number four, Penn State's going to have a huge slide in the rankings.
Right. You know, those are two matches you don't expect Penn State to lose no matter what's going on. So, you know, it's hard to say. There's still talent there, but, you know, for some reason it's just not coming together yet. And I wouldn't count them out at the end of the year, but, boy, right now it looks like, you know, Russ is going to have to pull out some of his best coaching to get them going again.
Yeah, it's time to do a little bit of work and develop some talent. Also, Illinois. Number six, Illinois, went down to number 18, Michigan, 3-1 in an interesting matchup.
Yeah. You know, in fact, I was talking to Mark Rosen this morning, and, you know, the really interesting thing about Michigan is they have a great setter in Lexi Zimmerman, and they're doing it with some young players around her. Alex Hunt's back again, but Jennifer Cross is a freshman from Canada, and Claire McElhinney is a redshirt sophomore who didn't see the court much as a freshman, and they're both really playing well. So, you know, that was a good win for Michigan because they went to Penn State the week before and got smacked three sets to none, And then they come back and have a good weekend beating Wisconsin and then the big one against Illinois. So, yeah. You know, the interesting thing about the Big Ten is there's a lot more depth at the bottom of the conference than there has been in the past. You know, the top teams have been pretty good, but they're getting stronger at the bottom.
Well, this just seems like a topsy-turvy season after the domination of Penn State. All of a sudden, there are a whole bunch of teams that are just beating the heck out of each other. And it seems to be a more interesting matchup. There's a lot of different things to talk about. And why is this happening now? Why are there so many teams that are kind of back and forth?
Well, you know, in Penn State's case, you can't replace players, you know, like Megan Hodge and Elisa Glass. Those players just don't come along that often. And I think that's one of the problems that they're having this year is, you know, they always knew who they could go to in the past. Even when you go back to Nicole Fawcett and Krista Armato, and, you know, they've always had just players that could dominate if another player had a night off. And right now, is Blair Brown and Ariel Wilson the kind of players that can pick up and just carry a team? Probably not. You know, they never played that role, so it's kind of new for them in that respect, too. So it's just kind of a feeling their way around right now to when things get tough. And so far, they haven't been able to put it together.
Yeah.
A really cool story, though, out of the Big Ten is Northwestern this year. You know, this is a very experienced team. These kids have been on the court basically for 4 years together, and they got a huge boost when they got Christina Kalin that played at Notre Dame, and she transferred in when she went to law school. So they picked up a really experienced player, and that kind of put them over the top.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, so I'm really excited to see Northwestern up there because it's been a long time since they've been a factor in the Big Ten.
Yeah, Northwestern ranked 24th last week, defeated Iowa 3-0, and then defeated number 16 Minnesota 3-1. So it looks like they're going to be on their way up the AVCA rankings.
Yeah, they're going to go up a few places. And the thing about Northwestern, though, you got to remember, they've done it at home so far this year. So when they start getting more of a road schedule, it might be a little bit tougher. But, you know, they played a good match at Illinois, went five sets, and so we'll see what happens.
I don't know if I really buy into that home and away stuff. And the crowd, as a player, never affected me. If the gym is a dump, that's something else. But it seems like most of these gyms would be pretty nice. I don't understand quite what the effect's going to be if you're playing somebody else's gym.
Oh, you know what? I think in Champaign, when you go into Huff Hall, that's a wild crowd. That's a tough place to play. And I think a five-set loss isn't something to get too down about there. But, you know, this week, Northwestern's going to Michigan and then Michigan State. So then we'll see a little bit better about how they perform on the road.
Excellent. Well, in the Big 12, number 10, Iowa State defeated Texas Tech 3-0 and then lost to Kansas, unranked Kansas, which was an interesting one. And then Texas defeated Colorado and defeated Kansas State. So not great competition, but Texas getting a couple of wins.
Yeah, that was big for Texas, you know, to kind of get their stuff straightened out a little bit. You know, Kansas State's playing pretty good, so that might have been a good win for Texas, who, you know, had been struggling early in the season. Iowa State, you know, I really surprised they lost to Kansas. That's a team that I would say Christy Johnson's not happy with how things have gone so far. But we'll see. You know, there's still lots of time, which is the good thing about this point in the season. We're really only about halfway, you know, to the start of the tournament. You know, a little bit earlier in the conference play, so it's still, there's time.
Well, that's a big deal, too, for the women, that they have a 64-team tournament to look forward to. If you're on the men's side, you lose a couple of times, you know it's pretty much over. You're going to get a real tough matchup to try and come out of your conference, and there aren't a lot of avenues to get to that opportunity to really play for an NCAA championship. For the women, you can lose a few times, you can come back, play your conference tournament, or perhaps get an at-large bid and end up in the tournament in a variety of different ways.
Yeah, and, you know, you get the right draw, you get the right matchup, you win a couple games, somebody else gets knocked off, you know, in your side of the bracket, and all of a sudden, you know, the avenue opens up and you can get up maybe to the Elite Eight, to even the national championship appearance. So it'll be interesting this year. There's a lot of teams that could probably make a run if the things go right for them at the end of the year.
Yeah, what else is on your radar from this week, or are you already looking forward to next?
Well, you know, definitely looking forward to next week, and you're probably going to hear a little bit more about this, you know, from Holly. But, you know, we have both Stanford and Cal playing host to Washington this week. And so those are kind of the top three there. So we'll see how that shakes out. You know, one of the other neat things, I think we might have a new number one this week, and it probably will be the University of Florida. And if it is, that'll be the first time since 1996 that the Gators have been on top of the poll. So
That'd be a very nice honor.
Yeah, and you know what? And they've earned it because they played nine nationally ranked teams so far, and, you know, with wins over Nebraska, Iowa State, Texas. You know, it's not like they're just kind of sliding up the polls. Other teams, you know, have lost. They've really earned their way up. And, you know, they're on top of the SEC. They weren't supposed to be there this year. So, you know, Mary Wise's team's really got it going.
You mentioned this is about halfway through the season. I wanted to know, who do you think has underperformed this year?
Wow. Well, I mean, obviously, you know, Penn State and Texas haven't, you know, after their just brilliant match in last year's national championship, you know, you kind of expect them just to reload and to be back. But the neat thing is, I think this shows you how much parity is now out there in volleyball. You know, there's so many good clubs out there. There are so many good coaches out there that, you know, there's the neat thing is there's so many new programs that are in the hunt. You know, one other team that really hasn't performed as well as they thought they would be Kentucky in the SEC. You know, they started the season ranked, and they're kind of lost. They're barely getting votes now in the poll. So I don't even think they got a vote last week. So, well, actually, they did. But, you know, they're not playing as well as they thought they would.
Well, that's some of the programs that have not done well. There's some players out there that you expected more from this season that just haven't stepped up?
You know, it's so tough because depending on a player – only because it's such a team sport, and in the women's game, you know, you really have to have everything going together to be successful. I hate to really dump on one of the players, you know, but the setters seem to be the focal point for the women's game. If you're not playing well, you know, it's really tough to be consistent and to beat a good team. So, you know, I think keeping it on a positive side, I think the teams with the experienced setters, the ones that are really playing up to their level of play, are the ones that are doing well right now.
Well, okay, so the other side of that coin is, who has exceeded expectations?
Oh, boy. I think there's a couple of teams out there. I think Michigan's has done pretty well with what they've had to replace. They lost 55% of their offense last year, and I think Lexi Zimmerman has held that team together pretty well. We've talked about Northwestern. You know, they've far exceeded what we thought they would do. Cincinnati's having a great year. You know, they're on top of the Big East. They beat Notre Dame in three sets this weekend at home on Sunday afternoon. And, you know, you're going to hear more about the Pac-10 in a little bit. But, boy, you know, that's such a deep conference that any week it seems like anybody in the top seven teams could be the other team. So it's just a really exciting year with so much balance, so much parity out there.
Awesome. Awesome. Dave, we appreciate your insights, and thanks for being a part of the College Volleyball Weekly here on the Net Live.
Great, Kevin. Thanks, and have a great week.
All right. Thank you. You too. All right, Dave Reed from ESPN.com and live from Colorado Springs. I want to jump to another call. We're expecting Holly McPeak here shortly, but 814, you're on the air here on the Net Live. Give us your name, where you're calling from.
Barney, it's Jay.
Jay, what are you thinking? That was on me just so we don't know that it's you.
You know, I'm trying to mix it up a little bit every week. I don't want to make it too easy for you to guess who it was in case you wanted to ignore the phone call.
Jay, the coach for the men's team there in Happy Valley. I understand it's been some beautiful weather across the East Coast.
You know, I broke out the beach balls yesterday, the antennas and the lines, and we got this this little park down the road that has beautiful little sand courts, and myself and Colin McMillan and a couple other guys went out and played a little ball yesterday. It was beautiful, 80 degrees, sunny and nice.
Holy cow, C-Mac, Colin McMillan, the giant redhead.
Yeah, Colin's got some skills on the beach. You'd be surprised.
Oh, my gosh. Well, hey, in the middle of College Volleyball Weekly here, give us your opinion on what's happening with the women's season. We know you're sitting just down the way there from Russ Rose and Penn State. It's a little bit of a struggle for them this year.
You know, I think Dave hit it right on the head. You know, it's a different year, and everybody, you know, wants to say, oh, they're just reloading, they're just reloading. You know, you get a great class that comes in, and sure, you're going to get some kids that want to come and be a part of a winning tradition, but I think any coach is going to tell you, if you're a kid that's coming into a program and you know that you're not going to play because, you know, the best player in the country is in your position and she's a freshman like you, you're not going to go to that place. And so, you know, you have these great classes that came through, and I think some other kids that maybe thought this would be the place they want to go to, I think they may have went other places. And so there's going to be a little bit of a lull. At least that's my take on it. And, you know, Deja is doing a great job. She's a true freshman. I don't know about the Darcy Dorton situation. I have to assume that if there's a chance that they're going to go deep into the tournament, she may or may not be able to play. I don't know what that situation is. I haven't talked to Russ about it. I know that she's working real hard in the training room trying to get stronger and better. But, you know, that could be one of the situations where she says, you know, if we're not going to be that good this year, why waste a year of eligibility for, you know, a few weeks worth of play? So that could be a situation. So I think that's the take. And it's going to take a year or two for them to get back up and up to speed. I think the class that came in is really good. They're real big girls, and, you know, they're going to be okay, you know. And it's, I think, for the sport, I think it's good when different teams are successful. I think it's, you know, my take on the AVP. Phil and Todd are awesome players. I got bored watching them win all the time. So maybe this is good. Maybe this this helps out programs across the country.
I think you make an interesting point about the recruiting and the phases and the cycles of players, because it's one thing we talk about bringing players in and coaching them up and making them part of a program. We've talked a lot about player development, but we haven't talked about the recruiting aspect of running a collegiate program. And like you said, if you have a freshman or a couple freshmen or a freshman and sophomore that are going to dominate a position, players coming out of high school look at that, well, I don't want to go there. And so managing that lull, that recruiting lull in between, is an interesting aspect for the recruiting side, for the assistant coaches that usually handle a lot of recruiting in many programs, and also for the head coach and the assistant coaches when they're in the gym, to manage that lull with both decent recruiting just below the very top level and then coaching those players up and perhaps manufacturing a great player.
Well, you know, you have a lot of coaches that are on this program at various points, and I'm sure that, you know, each one has their own specific style of what they like to recruit. And some would say, you know, every year I go for the biggest and the best. You know, other coaches would say I like to stagger my players by a couple of years. You know, whatever your taste is, I think you're right. The ability to manage your program and make it work for you is what's going to be the difference between teams that, you know, aren't up and down every other year because of their recruiting classes. They're just kind of reloading, so to speak. And, you know, whether that's the team that has, you know, great classes that come in every year and just, you know, they just seem to only play their junior or senior year. They maybe aren't strong enough to play their freshman or sophomore year. And you played in one of those programs. That's how Pepperdine was. You never saw true freshmen, with the exception of Romaine and maybe Brad Keenan, and even he, I think, redshirted the year. But you see these kids come in, and they're playing against some of the biggest and best every single year in their gym training, and they need 2 or 3 years to develop. So, you know, that's got to be the type of kid that wants to come to your program. He's got to figure out that that's going to be the best fit for him, or he's ultimately going to be disappointed.
Well, Jay, thanks for calling in, and hopefully next time when I send you a note about being a co-host, you might respond and end up here on the program a little bit longer.
Give me a day notice or a few hour notice. I had some recruits that came off campus. I had to take care of them. But next time I'll be on, brother man. Take care.
Right.
Thanks for the show. See ya.
All right. Good talking to you, Jake.
Bye.
Jay Hossick. And now moving on, our next correspondent. Glad to have her back. Chris McGee's partner, or perhaps Chris McGee is her partner, Holly McPeak. Welcome back to the Net Live.
Chris is my partner.
We
take care of each other, though.
I knew you were going to say that. And before we get to any sort of business, I want to know, was Geeter luggage this week? Did he have all the proper documentation and was able to carry him again?
Because we heckled him on your show, he picked up the pace, picked me up at the airport at 11:30 p.m. in the middle of nowhere. He was fantastic.
Oh, very good. Very good. Well, at least we can make him aspire to greatness by publicly shaming him.
But you know what we need to do next? Our next goal with him is he's not allowed to text while driving. And that's a public statement. So anybody who drives with him, take that phone away from him.
We're going to have to give out his
license
number and tell everyone he drives a white Prius so they can nail him with a couple of tickets here in the South Bay.
Exactly.
Well, hey, big news in the Pac-10 this past week. It was a wild week. Got to start with UCLA Stanford. UCLA coming out ahead 3-2.
Well, I mean, what a weekend in the Pac-10. You know, starting Friday night, Stanford beat USC in four. USC ranked higher than UCLA. But Stanford back-to-back nights lost to UCLA in five. Huge win by number 12 UCLA. You know, UCLA is scrappy, and they're going to make it tough to beat you, and Stanford had an off night. UCLA was able to capitalize on that. So that's a big win. And then you saw the flip side happen to Cal. Cal beat UCLA in four and then lost to USC in five, 17-15 in the fifth.
Yeah, that was a crazy match. It had four deuce games, including that 17-15 in the fifth, and that's just a wild match, a lot of fun for the fans.
Yeah, you know, USC is a young team. I've been very impressed with them. Cal, I'm surprised Cal's where they are. You know, a little bit of a rebuilding year, losing Hanashutara, their big gun for, you know, the last 4 years. But they've really stepped up, and the area that they've been fantastic is blocking. They've had 17 blocks per match, and those are big numbers in women's volleyball, the last two matches in the Pac-10.
Yeah, definitely. Blocking is a way, it scores 1 point like everything else, but it seems to demoralize your opponent in a way that a lot of the other phases of the game don't.
Well, I think it affects the hitter's mentality. They're going up and they're like, okay, I've been blocked off the court. The block's touching everything. And in the case for UCLA, you know, they're digging everything around it. So frustrating for offense, and it definitely plays the mental game. Another big win in the Pac-10 was Arizona beat Oregon in five. Oregon was undefeated. Well, they had one loss, but undefeated in the preseason. Arizona came back and beat them in five. So that was a big win as well.
And that was at home. It looks like Oregon was at home and lost to Arizona.
Yes, correct. Go ahead.
Number nine, Washington. Defeated Washington State, pretty predictable, but now 15-1 and 4-1 in the Pac-10. Washington looks like they're kind of back to their old form from a few years ago.
Well, Washington played a depleted Washington State University. They've lost a lot of players to injury and transfer and all sorts of things. So Washington State's really struggling. But Washington is definitely kind of moving into their groove. The thing about the Pac-10 is anybody can beat anybody. It's a serve and pass game. If somebody's putting too much pressure on the other team, you know, there's so much parity, it could go either way.
Well, interesting. What else is on your radar from this past week or upcoming?
Well, you know, I just thought the USC, UCLA, I believe they're going to, I think Stanford's in Washington next week, or Washington's at Stanford. I looked at the schedule. I think Washington's at Stanford, and I think that's going to be a big test for Stanford. Interesting, I've been trying to get a hold of the coaches at Stanford, but they were running a 6-2 much of the preseason, and now Cassidy Lickman, who's one of their best all-around players, is now setting a 5-1. So it looks like Carissa Cook, who's had back issues the last 3 years, serious back issues, is out of the lineup. So they lose Cassidy Lickman as a hitter at Stanford. She's a great setter, but she also passes the court, hits a lot of balls for them. So that looks like it's affected Stanford, and I think it'll be an interesting matchup, Stanford-Washington this week.
Yeah, we had Cassidy on the show earlier today, and she indicated that against UCLA, she thought they relied on Alex Kleiman too much on the outside, and having switched to that 5-1, that definitely has left a hole in the offense, and someone else is going to have to pick up the slack because, as you mentioned, Cassidy is unable to, and she has been one of those players that's emerged from being just a setter to a, kind of a setter-hitter and now really effective at both phases of the game.
Well, the problem with having Cassidy Lickman on your team is she does everything well. So she's probably one of the best passers on the team, the best hitter, and the best setter. So where do you put her? They don't have somebody of her caliber to set. They've got some other players who can step in and hit. I believe Stanford's been relying on Alex Kleiman too long. I mean, I think she's one of the best players in the country, don't get me wrong. She was coming back from shoulder surgery last year. She was getting about 70 sets a match, and she still continues to get that. I just think, you know, people are going to key on her, and it's tough. I mean, if they shut Alex Kleiman down, they set up their whole defense to stop her, they're going to make the other players beat them. And without Cassidy Lickman attacking, it's going to be tough.
I'll tell you what you do with a player like Cassidy Lickman who does all those skills. You put her on the beach. That's what you do with her. She's
yeah, that's things. Later. That's down the line.
I asked her why she hadn't played middle blocker yet. I don't know why she hasn't dominated at that position. I mean, she does everything
yeah,
else.
Yeah, what's wrong with her? Get in the middle. She's a fantastic talent. Stanford's actually very deep in a lot of different positions. It's just that setting spot remains a question. I'd love to see Cassidy hitting again. I mean, she's a fantastic setter. If they could get Carissa Cook or somebody healthy at that other spot, I think it would really relieve Alex Kleinman a lot as well.
Yeah, about halfway through the season here, we wanted to know, in your opinion, who has underperformed both programs and players?
Well, looking at the Pac-10, I'm a little disappointed by Arizona State. They had some injuries early on. They're just not playing at the level they could and should. They need to refill some spots there. Washington State is depleted because of injuries. Oregon State lost Rachel Rourke, their All-American from Australia. These are all teams that haven't really rebuilt, and in the Pac-10, you can't. There's no down years. There's no easy wins. So Pac-10, those three schools, you know, Arizona beating Oregon, that was kind of, I was, you know, watching Arizona trying to figure out where they stood, but I think that's a good win for them. And they've got a lot of talent at Arizona. They've got Whitney Dosti and Tiffany Owens, and they've got the addition of Kirstie Jackson in the middle, who I think is really going to help Arizona go. And they have a chance to get back to the tournament this year, Arizona.
All right, so that's the people who've underperformed. But how about stepping up unexpectedly? Who has exceeded your expectations?
Cal for sure. Like I said earlier, their blocking's been incredible. And with the loss of Hanna Sutra, who carried their offense, Tara Murray and the other freshmen outside had really stepped up. But, you know, they've got a senior setter, Carly Lloyd, who's done a great job. So I think Cal's been the most impressive. I think Oregon as well. I don't know if they've been tested to the same extent as some of the other programs, but Oregon's done a good job with only one loss right now.
All right, very good. What else do you have for us? Any other comments, any other digs on Geeter? Because we'll hang on for any of that.
No, he pulled his weight this week, so I can't give him a hard time.
Where are you?
I think Michigan, I'm sorry, I know I've been focusing on the Pac-10, but Michigan beating Illinois in Fort, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
I think that's really interesting. You know, I like watching the national picture, and I think that was something that surprised me because Illinois has been tough. I mean, they were vulnerable. They lost to Cincinnati. But losing to Michigan, I think that's the first time Michigan beat a top five team since, like, 1987.
Well, we were just talking about this with Dave and kind of the up-and-down nature of this whole season with Penn State now kind of falling off a cliff, losing to two unranked teams, and Illinois, who's been up and down, walked into a place like Texas and pounded them, and Texas has been kind of up and down. Now Illinois has been back and forth. It really is an interesting season because week in, week out, you don't know who's going to climb the rankings or who's going to go down. And now looking at possibly number one Florida could be this week and maybe the first time since 1996. And you have a couple of teams like Penn State who are just going to fall precipitously in the rankings.
Well, I think it's a fantastic year. I think it makes everything exciting. There's parity all the way down. You know, I mean, we've got some really strong teams in the Pac-10, but they're going to beat each other up. So they're going to always kind of fall in the rankings. Hawaii, who I think is a legitimate team, played very well, dominating the WAC. They've got some great production out of their middles, Emily Hartung and Brittany Hewitt. I think they're going to be a challenger. And because they don't get challenged in their league, they're probably, you know, they have a good chance at staying in that top five spot.
Yeah, number five ranked Hawaii was idle this past week. But it's an interesting conundrum when you're a coach. If you have to play poor competition, you're expected to step into the tournament and all of a sudden play against maybe a Pac-10 squad or a Big Ten squad who's going to be pretty darn good and kind of raise your level.
Well, I asked Dave Soji that exact question because that's why they challenged themselves in the preseason. He said, you know what, we've gotten really good at pushing ourselves every day at practice against one another. And,
yeah,
you know, that takes a special mentality and a special kind of athlete and program to do that. But he thinks they've done it pretty well. Obviously, they've been, you know, regional finalist and Final Four last year. So I think they're better this year than they were last year.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, because you talk about the confidence side of things, and if you're playing matches and winning matches, there is some value in that. Even if the competition isn't 100%, you kind of develop some of that swagger, and every time you step on the court, you expect to win, and that may not be the case if you play in a conference like the Pac-10 where you're kind of here and there, and your expectations may not always be to dominate.
No, Pac-10, it's a battle every night. No easy wins. I mean, there's a couple depleted teams right now who have been struggling with injuries, but for the most part, no easy wins. And if you don't get too beat up and lose people to injuries, I think that best prepares you for playoffs because you're ready for any type of situation and you're playing the best competition, which I think only makes you better.
Now, Holly, I want to ask you one question outside of the College Volleyball Weekly here. I talked earlier a little bit about the beach, and we had Billy Berger on last week talking about the business of the beach and so on. One of the things that I wonder and that I said here that I think the beach players need to adjust in their mind what the value is of their service, what the value is in a tournament. They're not going to play for $100,000 worth of prize money in a tournament here in the United States. You've seen many years, many different groups come about and run pro beach volleyball tours. Do you think it's time for the players to adjust their financial expectations for the sport?
Absolutely. I've been around the sport for the last 20 years, and prior to that, I grew up around a lot of the professional athletes and around the sport. So I've seen it all, and you know, it's hard because obviously we've got some of the best athletes in the world who work and train really hard, but right now they just can't make a living doing it. And for a lot of people, it's going to be a wake-up call. They're going to have to get jobs and play volleyball on the side instead of play volleyball full-time and get jobs on the side. And for a lot of people, I think it's actually going to be good in the long run because people have families and health payments, and you can't depend on whatever's going to happen in our sport right now. It's sponsor-driven sport. The economy's down. The dollars aren't there. We don't have the people running the sport, and we're not that big. Beach volleyball is a fantastic niche sport. It's a lifestyle sport. So here's how I looked at it as an athlete. I am so lucky to be playing beach volleyball for a living. I'm going to maximize every opportunity I have, and if I can't make a living doing that, I'm going to get a job and play on the side. And I was fortunate to make a living for 20 years. But at this point right now, nobody knows what to expect. So, I just think focusing on a career, because I'll tell you, for those athletes who go at 22, 23 years of age and try and start playing beach volleyball, they don't try and enter the workforce till, 30s. And they're, 10 years behind everybody in the workforce, which is a really dangerous place to be when you're in your 30s.
Right. I think, unfortunately, we're in danger of losing an entire generation of players, and you say it might be good for people personally. Some of the folks who are on the fence or thinking about retiring, who have families, have obligations, it may be good for them in the long term, but it's not going to be good for the sport if you lose an entire generation of players who could have risen to the top or players who are coming out of college now who won't have the opportunity. I know it happened to me in the late 90s when I came out. People asked me why I didn't play beach. I said it wasn't even an option. I couldn't think about it because the AVP was in a steep nosedive, and now
exactly.
It's completely gone.
Yeah, no, I agree. I don't want to lose a group of players, but at the same time, players started to feel entitled.
players were
starting to, not pay attention to what was going on with the business. I mean, anybody who knew, who was in the know in terms of the sport, should have known that they were in deep trouble in February. And it's being aware. I think a lot of players, just go, I'm just going to show up, and as long as I'm getting paid, I don't care what happens. But unfortunately, when it's your career, you got to pay more attention to that. I think players are still going to develop, play. I think there's going to be small opportunities across the board for players to play and improve their beach game. And I think it will come back. I don't know when or where or how. I think it's definitely going to be smaller and different, and I think the Olympic and international opportunity will remain.
Well, we'll see. It remains to be seen. We'll keep following on this show. Thanks, Holly, for being here, both College Volleyball Weekly and offering your opinion as a woman who's been in the sport for 20-plus years and a Hall of Famer. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Have a great day.
All right. Have a good week.
Holly
McKee here on the College Volleyball Weekly. presented in association with the American Volleyball Coaches Association. And this week, UCLA, who had the big win against number one Stanford, so they get the music. We'll have to see if they perform next week as well, and we play them again. I'm far enough out of college now I can actually play this and not bark. Somewhere, Eric Sullivan is laughing. There you go, ladies and gentlemen. That's College Volleyball Weekly, and that's just about a wrap here on the Net Live. It's been another good program. Had a lot of fun. We do have one caller on the line, 949. Give us your name, where you're calling from here on the Net Live.
Hey, Kevin. It's Rob Asparo from UC Irvine.
Rob, hey, I'm glad you called. I put in a note to you to call about the UC Irvine Global Challenge, or the International Volleyball Tournament, and give us a little report on what happened there, Rob, on the mic. You were there all weekend.
Oh, 12 matches in 6 days. The voice is hurting.
Yeah.
So, what happened was Sada Cruzeiro of Brazil just dominated the tournament. They lost one set the entire time. The MVP of the tournament was a stud, Felipe Ferraz, who just had such a wicked arm swing at the pins and also coming down the bick. I think Sada Cruzeiro of Brazil had one of the most incredible setters in William Arjona. He stands at 6'1", but he is so deceptive and knew his offense so well and was so confident on the court that he is running such a mix of plays that the other teams couldn't figure him out. But one of the big, one of the biggest surprises of the tournament, though, is on Wednesday night when Evan Paddock showed up to play for the Korean Air Jumbos. You'll like this. The biggest uniform that the Jumbos had didn't fit Paddock, so they had to cut the sleeves of his tank, and he's basically wearing bicycle shorts out on the court.
I did notice in the picture that it was looking awfully tight.
Yes, but it didn't hinder his performance by any means because he is bombing away, and teams are having such a tough time against him. Argentina tried to adjust against him, UPCN of Argentina. They changed their lineup, got their biggest blockers on him, and all they could do was get the garbage off the block, but he still managed to get over 20-something kills against them.
And he was an animal from the service line as well, out-serving pretty much everyone in the tournament.
Yep, the first night he got six aces, and yesterday in the match against China, you know, he started off with like three off the bat, and I know there were more. They pulled him. He actually got a little injury where some blood was showing, but I think it was just a scrape, and they wanted to rest their new investment because apparently he just signed with Korea this week, and that's why he was playing yesterday. He was supposed to be gone for Poland on Saturday, and he said, if I saw him yesterday, that means he's playing for the Jumbos.
Oh, very nice. Well, good. Tell us about the success of this event from a crowd standpoint and all the clinics you guys had going on. How did it all go?
Well, I didn't get to make you tell the clinics. The evening events were pretty demanding time-wise. So from what I understand, there were a ton of kids at the youth volleyball clinic. The U.S. Youth Volleyball League had a little clinic on Saturday, and you saw a few of the faces in there in the evening. The grass tournament, I didn't get too many of the results from, but from what I understand, it was a pretty full tournament. I talked to the administrative guy who was kind of overseeing everything while assistant coach Niffen was inside handling the tournament events, but he said that it was a good showing of the tournament at Crawford Court or Crawford Field, and they were just it was a beautiful day. It was smoke and hot out there, so I'm sure everyone was dehydrated. But a lot of festivities going on around the campus. They had the cultural clubs there, the Korean cultural clubs. They had some of the Chinese clubs there. There were just some great Brazilian fans who came in attendance. You know, it was just they were loud. They were banging on drums. I mean, just we'd love to create a bigger scene every year. You know, it didn't fill the brand, but, you know, it was a good, lively crowd that we were excited to see.
Yeah, it's good to hear. It's nice that the Brazilian fans come in. They're always fun to watch, and it does give people a little bit of a flavor as to how the sport is spectated throughout the rest of the world. And it isn't quiet. There's no golf clap. It's not like tennis where you'd be quiet on the serve. We're talking horns, screaming, whistling, noise machines of any kind. It's a lot of fun to see that.
Yeah, we'd love to see that scene here. I think the only bummer is with the MPSF and NCAA, you know, they have this strong demand for silence. Like, gosh, we are missing out so much on the sport by mandating that silence and no noisemakers for NCAA competition. Because these guys, they're so live and loudly, you know, they're harassing the server.
Okay, is that a mandate for all sports, or is that just particular to volleyball?
Well, I think it may be a volleyball thing, because I know that reading the pregame announcements, you know, you see, you know, no artificial noisemakers and so forth, and it's kind of a disappointment, because the whole excitement is the noise the whole time, like in World Cup. It was a minute of silence there.
I think we need to make a movement and have it be for volleyball in particular, that noisemakers be allowed. People be allowed to cheer. No more shutting people up. That should be part of the deal. If you come in, you have to play in a hostile gymnasium, and not hostile to you personally, but noisemakers, I'm all for that. That sets an atmosphere. That makes it fun and a party, and people want to be a part of that.
Oh, yeah, just like at World League in Chicago this last year. You know, they USA Volleyball got some cowbells, and they were being used in full effect out there.
Absolutely, absolutely. If you listen to the World Championships over the last couple of days, there's all kinds of whistling going on and horns and people bring in horn machines. It's really, really fun. And I'm tired of volleyball as tennis here in the United States. So I'm starting now. Everyone get behind on this petition. We need to just get rid of the silence. Shut the silence up. Well, hey, Rob, we really appreciate you calling in and giving us a little report on that event there. I think it's a great event. I hope that people replicate it. I hope the women's side of the sport picks it up. I hope we see that with more and more NCAA and professional competition. That would be great.
Excellent. Good talking to you, Barney. Hope you have a good week, man.
All right, you too. Rob Espiro. Rob on the mic from down there at UC Irvine. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's been a great episode of the Net Live. We heard from Reed Pretty. We talked to Cassidy Lickman from Stanford. We had a couple of great reports from Dave Reed and Holly McPeak and the College Volleyball Weekly, and we made the fans angry because we played the UCLA fight song. I like any time the fans get upset. Anything we can play to aggravate you people is perfect. But we appreciate you being here. We want you to respond to us on Facebook during the week. We try and throw some stuff up there. Feel free to put some posts up there with questions and things you want to hear about here on our program. And you can call us 347-677-1525 during our shows. You can email us thenetlive@gmail.com anytime during the week or message us on Facebook. We're going to be back next week. I think Geeter will be here. I think Reed will be back in the mix shortly as soon as he gets back to Russia. That and more fun. Lots of great action coming up this week for the world of volleyball. Women are training for world championships and the NCAA continues. So that's it for the Net Live. It's been fun. Well, I hope you make it to the next Monday. I'm Kevin Barnett. This has been the Net Live. We'll see you again soon.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.